Hello and welcome back to episode 34 of the Unmasking the Abuser podcast. As you probably already know, I'm Dr. Dina McMillan. I'm a social psychologist and a relationship expert. I also created Unmasking the Abuser, the world's first targeted prevention program for domestic abuse and violence. Unmasking the Abuser takes a proactive approach designed to not only support victims and survivors, but also avoid making new victims and survivors. We do this first by exposing the most effective maneuvers used by abusers to lure in and trap their partners. We demonstrate what these are and explain why they work so well. We also offer simple but effective tools to help potential targets sidestep the cunning manipulation that entangles so many in toxic relationships. Unmasking the Abuser offers effective primary prevention, but it does more. We help victims and survivors understand how they were captured and alert them to the moves their abuser will use to try to lure them back into the toxic relationship. No more waiting until after someone is emotionally abused and perhaps even physically brutalized before we offer help. Unmasking the Abuser has valuable insights for every stage of an abusive relationship, even at the very beginning. And listen up. Unmasking the Abuser focuses on powerful psychological manipulation techniques that are also used in other types of relationships, with family and friends, in the workplace, politically, and even in social movements and charities. Once you gain the ability to see those strings of manipulation, you've developed a superpower that can be turned on whenever you need it to keep yourself and your loved ones safe. That's in any context, personal and professional. That's great, isn't it? Well, it needs to be. Those devious tactics are incredibly effective, even if you're smart and independent and careful. You have to know what they look like, be alert for how they'll make you feel, and get useful tools to protect yourself and your loved ones if you're going to remain safe. Now, let's talk about this episode. If you look at this topic and its publication date, you'll notice I'm putting it out right before Valentine's Day. The good thing about podcasts, though, is that you can listen to it whenever you like. And this topic is definitely not relevant to only one day a year. I've called this episode, Oops, I Did It Again, both because of the way we're approaching this subject and as a small salute to the return of Britney Spears to the public arena. Of course, she's a topic for another day. This episode is not just about romance, and it's certainly not only for those currently in a romantic relationship, whether or not it's healthy and happy. This is really less about this Valentine's Day and more about your future Valentine's Days. These insights can be accessed whenever you like, used as a refresher course for some of the concepts, and to be able to apply the learning to other areas of your life. No matter who you are or your current romantic situation, this episode is all about you. You're listening to the Unmasking the Abuser podcast with Dr. Dina McMillan. This is the Valentine's Day episode I've named, Oops, I Did It Again. We're discussing ways that anyone and everyone can have happier, healthier relationships, regardless of your romantic situation. And so you don't think I've forgotten about the message of the day, these insights will definitely improve your ability to attract and keep a healthier romantic partner. We'll start with something I noticed while at the hairdresser's recently. And those of you who don't know or who don't spend much time at the hairdressers, a lot of them are the source of much gossip, laughter, and wisdom. Now, in my experience, I had a deep discussion with a woman who found out what I do and began talking about her love life, past, presently, and hopefully in the future. I noted some issues that have caused definite problems. These are fairly common and can be like poison in a relationship. And in case you think I'm sounding superior, I've been guilty of many of the same things in the past, and it caused no end of drama. Here are the basics. Most of us have X-ray vision when it comes to other people's faults. But when we turn that vision onto what we do wrong, we usually don't look, won't look, or try to make excuses for leaving those huge emotional boulders right in the middle of our lives. The young woman I spoke with said, "I love myself just as I am." Some of you may hear that and think to yourself, "Oh, wow, she's so confident." Often if you say something like that, what you're really saying, let me translate for you. It means, "I'm not willing to change. Even if I do things wrong, even if I cause problems for myself and others, I'm not willing to put in the work to make it better." In the conversation, this woman also talked about taking some new training to improve her professional prospects, and even that she was taking some classes for fun to gain new skills. Learning anything is a huge cognitive plus at every stage of life. It keeps your brain flexible, develops new neural pathways, and even helps hold off degenerative conditions like dementia. But why do so many people resist this learning when it comes to their own relationships with other people? This woman turned out to be wonderfully open about the criticism she's received about certain personal characteristics. However, she didn't really want to look at them, work on them, take responsibility for the impact they'd had on her relationships of all kinds, not only on her love life. She had a list, though, of specific characteristics she was demanding of anyone who wanted to be her romantic partner. With no concessions, for him just shrugging and saying, "That's just how I am." I often see that same kind of willful blindness in other areas regarding social and political causes and even favorite reality TV shows. Yes, I went there. What we do, what we like, is good. Everything else is the worst thing ever. Any faults that we have, and those of any loved ones who we now place under our protective umbrella, are understandable and should be accommodated. The faults of others should be worked on and eliminated as soon as possible. They may even be deserving of punishment. The causes we support are actually taking society forward, with a few people who make understandable mistakes. Those who we view as the other side are dangerous criminals. We'll accept anything bad said about people we see as other, with no evidence required, and with the harshest viewpoint, even if it's things we've done ourselves or our side has done. This thinking is a type of severe us versus them. It leads to extremism. It leads to the strongest type of bias and even bigotry. In our personal lives, this kind of thinking leads to a lifetime of misery and failed relationships. And by the way, I consider a relationship where people are still together, but at least one person is miserable, as a failed relationship too. I've noticed this strong bias and moral double standard creeping into more and more conversations when people are talking about their love lives, about politics, about the way the world works. And in fact, the political and social cause environment has become far more divided than I've ever seen it. I like to learn from all sides, but I choose my sources. I like to question those who have strong views, especially when those views are not based on evidence. They're based on beliefs, and they're demanding a buy-in from everyone else. I do this to try to understand. After all, I've made a commitment to continue learning throughout my life. I ask them, if the other side did something similar, how would you view it? How would you feel about it? What would you consider an appropriate response? More and more, I'm running into resistance. I'm finding that people won't even try to consider things from another perspective. It causes them too much emotional and psychological pain to look, let alone be empathetic to others, to have clarity about what's being done, to recognize the cherished values they're willing to abandon to keep their side from being held accountable, and to punish those they view as their enemies. Even to acknowledge the worth of unbiased assessments and factual evidence when they're making choices and decisions. When this happens, I know this person's critical thinking has been seriously compromised. I can't really trust their judgment on anything. Wherever and however they develop their severe bias, I know it's discoloring their views everywhere in their lives. There's a reason the statue of justice has always been blind. There is no justice if you only see wrong when someone else does something, or it's done by someone you see as your opposition, whether they see you that way or not. It's sad and it's dangerous. Why dangerous? That's not hyperbole. Voltaire said, "Those who can make you believe absurdities can make you commit atrocities." I wish he was trying to be clever and poetic. History says otherwise. When I'm dealing with these individuals or groups, I also recognize this way of perceiving and weighing right and wrong is going to feature prominently in their personal relationships. Without fail, they expect accommodation for themselves and perhaps a few others, but will be cruelly and harshly critical and judgmental of everyone outside of that intimate circle. In romantic relationships, this way of perceiving their loved ones happens during the earliest phases. Falling in love means seeing only the best in the person they fall in love with. Forgiving much. Ignoring everything they don't want to be true. For some people, this lasts years. For others, it fades quickly or slowly over time. And as that rose-colored halo starts to fade, the person will treat their former loved ones the same way they treat anyone else who's outside their special bubble. It's why many divorces get so ugly. In an abusive relationship, an interesting phenomenon occurs. The manipulation tactics and the trauma bonding that develop due to the hypervigilance, excessive control, frequent and unpredictable moods, and never-ending demands actually cause this rose-colored halo to move from the self of the victim onto the abuser. The victimized partner begins to view her or himself as the disliked opposition, there to be harshly judged and criticized, perhaps even punished. They're gaslit into accepting that role by the abuser. This is why an important early step in recovery for victims of abuse is to be fair to the self, to regain that sense of self, that valuing of self, that forgiveness of self that was willfully taken away by their abuser. That's another reason for the specific guidance I provide with unmasking the abuser. Victims don't need to be mollycoddled. They actually recover better when they're shown how the psychological manipulation tactics were used on them and taught how these maneuvers work on just about anyone if the person feels they cannot escape the source of the indoctrination. Abusers work hard from the beginning of a new relationship to increase trust, to create a strong emotional bond, and to encourage practical and, if possible, financial dependence by their new partner. They also convince them they cannot get away. Whatever the reason, a secret to better personal relationships, smarter political choices, and a more principled life is to smash those rose-colored glasses, whether they're being directed at the self or other people. Take active steps to reduce your bias. Take responsibility for your faults and shortcomings and work to correct them. Today, let's start small here and just look at ways of diminishing this harm in your personal relationships. Warning, when you do this, it's going to be a bit uncomfortable. I followed these steps myself because I don't believe in suggesting anything I wouldn't do myself. And I know it hurts. But the reward is immense. Wouldn't you like to improve all of your relationships? Wouldn't you prefer it if you couldn't be easily manipulated through your biases, your feelings, your drives, your emotions? Aren't you listening to this because you want to strengthen your superpower and maximize your critical thinking? I thought so. Now, if you're interested in trying this out, you may want to get a notebook or even your smartphone or tablet and open up the notes section or go to Google Workbooks. Are you ready? Now, some of the tips I'm including here are detailed further in my book, Fascination with the Devil: Why Women Love Emotionally Dangerous Men. This book, released in July of 2023, is available worldwide on Amazon and on my website. You should be aware, this book has broader aim than only abusers. It considers that strong romantic attraction, that sexual drive toward a wide range of partners who make you miserable, including cheaters, abusers, rebels, commitment phobes, and those who go from one relationship to the other, always on a quest to stay at that initial high that comes with the first stages of romantic love. And it does far more. It includes key info that's relevant whether you're a woman or a man. It discusses the beliefs and behaviors that can keep you on a never-ending cycle of romantic disappointment. With the aim of making this your last disappointing Valentine's Day, or to provide you with some clever tips to help out family and friends, let's discuss it. And in case you're wondering, once again, I will admit I've fallen for most of these mental traps. My bringing this to your attention isn't trying to make myself sound superior, and it isn't just about the woman in the beauty salon. I just see a culture that's doing everything it can to teach people to behave in ways that make healthy, lasting relationships more difficult or even impossible. But it only works if we let it. So let's agree not to let it, okay? Now think about it. Are there any issues you have in the way you relate to your loved ones that cause you trouble? Are there specific characteristics or behaviors that keep leading to arguments, emotional distance, breakups? Maybe when I said that, some thoughts entered your head. Think about it. Do you recall being accused of being a certain way? Or perhaps you got caught doing wrong things over and over? You may find yourself apologizing or not apologizing with the same or similar issues as the cause. Ooh, that doesn't feel nice, does it? Are you getting defensive when you recognize these destructive behaviors? Are they linked to beliefs that you hold on to with both hands, in spite of evidence they're flawed or even seriously problematic? Are they part of your self-image, so you tell yourself anyone dealing with you has to put up with it? But think about it even further. Do you really want a happily ever after relationship? Well, first get brutally honest with yourself about what you have to offer and where you fall short. What attitudes, beliefs, or behaviors cause challenges or even pain to those who are closest to you? I said it's time to be honest with yourself. You can't fix what you won't acknowledge is broken. You may have noticed all of the popular and successful anonymous programs have those participating first admit they have a serious problem. Well, you need to do the same. If you're feeling really brave, ask your closest family members and friends. They'll tell you. If you're feeling a bit tender, you can start by asking them what you do wrong romantically. Other personality flaws can wait until you get used to handling the discomfort of this type of confronting disclosure. And what about your sexuality? Do you think you're a good lover, considerate, and willing to make an effort? Is your sex life all about you and your needs? Do you only have sex when you want it, perform the way that pleases you, with your partner's needs and desires only considered after you've done something wrong and are trying to get back into their good books? If you're single and searching, are you trying to find a forever partner while you're still into constant hookups? Are you into porn or buying sex? If so, you may find it difficult to be loyal to one person, and your new partner may find it difficult to trust you. I have some friends who are into porn or into sex toys or into really kinky behavior, and they describe themselves as being sexually open-minded. No surprise, they find online dating difficult because they attract some really creepy people. If you're in the market for a long-term monogamous relationship, ask yourself what that looks like. Would someone who's looking for the same thing be attracted to you without you having to make major changes or even deceive them about who you are? Spend some time turning yourself into someone fantastic as a lifelong partner. If you have issues like moodiness, boredom, frequent anger, jealousy, or any type of sexual issues, get some professional help before you try to find your forever partner. Need to get in shape? Do it to become healthier and build up that discipline to keep it even after you find someone. When you recognize your failings, weaknesses, and harmful tendencies, don't give up hope. The way the brain works, almost everything is fixable. It requires discipline and integrity, two characteristics that are woven into the guidelines in my book, Fascination with the Devil. Speaking of books, I recommend you look up a psychologist named Carol Dweck. She's a Stanford professor I've mentioned before, who's done groundbreaking research on what she calls the growth mindset, a way of fundamentally changing what you think and believe. I'm talking changes in the brain, not just changes in what you tell yourself. Her book, Mindset, Changing the way you think to fulfill your potential is absolutely amazing. You can buy it in hard copy or audio version from Amazon and other major book retailers. She even has exercise cards to help you work through the steps. Something I should tell you, I'm also developing myself for the Unmasking the Abuser strategies and tactics. All this to say, there's no fault you have that's impeding your relationship health and success that cannot be changed. The last chapter of my book, In Fascination with the Devil, is called Ending the Fascination. You'll find some tips there, including some from Carol Dweck's work, fully credited to her, along with a lot of other useful information. The whole purpose of Fascination with the Devil is not just to help you understand why you have taste, why you're attracted and you desire someone who's going to break your heart. It's designed to help you actually fundamentally change what you desire. It can actually help you change your taste in romantic partners. Wouldn't that be great? No more settling. I don't believe in settling. I want you to want a better partner. I want to help you be a better partner. In the meantime, practice makes perfect. I've told you the exercises I'm suggesting in this episode, a lot of which just simply means looking to see what's causing you problems, asking your nearest and dearest if you miss anything, and then taking active steps to change them, can absolutely transform your life. And so you don't miss anything while you're doing this, start paying attention to what you think and what you feel. As you go through your day, as you scan social media or read or watch the news, pay attention to anything that stirs you emotionally. Especially look out for anything that makes you mad. Then stand back and ask yourself, if I or one of my closest family did that, would I still be as furious? Would I wait for more information before I judged? Or before I made a choice on how to react? Would I want to consider all of the facts before screaming, off with their heads? Am I ready to consider that what I saw or heard or read could only be part of the story? Or it may even be incorrect or out of context. Am I brave enough to consider what others with differing views say about this incident before I make up my mind? This is fantastic practice in removing bias. It's not just something that will help you in your personal relationships. It will help you in your work life. It will help you make choices about social movements to follow or to not follow. It will help you understand who's the best candidate to vote for based on your values and beliefs. One other brief note of caution if you're trying this out. The woman I was talking about at the top of this podcast, we also discussed how the brain works. I told her that powerful influence tactics, like the storytelling in books, films, plays, and television shows, go into the part of the brain that has no filter. I warned her that even if we're smart, if we expose ourselves to content that's filled with messages that conflict with reality, that go against our values, that try to promote things we believe are wrong, we'll be influenced. That's how it works because that's how the brain is designed. The part of the brain that interprets and uses language, that solves problems, that has rational thinking, goes into sleep mode during heightened circumstances. That's why those trying to persuade you, influence you, and manipulate you find ways to stir your emotions and or ignite your primal drives like sexual desire, anger, or even hunger. They know that once these things are aroused, you're more likely to make choices based on that arousal instead of waiting until you calm down and the rational part of your brain can wake up and take charge again. This young woman insisted it doesn't work that way on her, that she can watch films and shows that promote values and behaviors that she disagrees with strongly, and they have no effect on her because she can see what they're doing. She can point out the subtle and not so subtle attempts to encourage her to follow their approved narrative. I tried to explain to her that's not how the brain works. The part of her brain noticing the propaganda and arguing with the television is a totally different part of the brain than the parts taking the information in and adapting to it, a little at first and then more over time. She was adamant I was wrong. At that point, her family members spoke up and told her that her tendency to think she always knows better is why she keeps getting into trouble. If you had a similar reaction to what I said, and believe me, I run into this a lot, please understand I'm not sharing this to make your life difficult. I've studied human behavior and the brain extensively for more than 20 years. I have to keep up with all new knowledge on the brain, human behavior, sociology, neuroplasticity as it becomes available. And I have to obey the same rules I told that woman and that I'm suggesting for you. I have to carefully pay attention to the content and messaging in what I read, watch, and listen to. If they're promoting values I disagree with strongly, I put it down or turn it off. Those of you who listen to this podcast on a regular basis already know how important it is to monitor and assess the content of what you expose yourself to. I've written articles and books on this subject, and I still have to mind where I go. The parts of my brain that are vulnerable to influence did not get a doctorate from Stanford. Those parts of the brain are driven by older, less controllable factors. If I pretend I don't know that, then I'm not very smart. Try it all out. Write down your biggest stumbling blocks when it comes to relationships. Ask your nearest and dearest for suggestions and don't get defensive if they mention something you don't want to acknowledge yet. Still write it down. Then give yourself some time if you need to before you actively consider what's on your list. If you do any prayer or mindfulness exercises, or if you like to get out in nature, that will also help. The information in this podcast, in my books, and those by people like Carol Dweck can actively guide you through it, so none of your problems feel too big to conquer. The good news is, once you start actively addressing these issues, you'll see the benefits quickly. Your loved ones will feel listened to and cherished and will trust you more. You'll feel closer to each other. If you're out looking for a new partner, you'll be more attractive to an emotionally healthier person. That's great news, isn't it? So now, have a wonderful Valentine's Day, either this year or next year. As always, you can easily get in touch with me with your questions and comments. My email is unmaskingpodcast@gmail.com. That's unmaskingpodcast, all one word, @gmail.com. Or if you go to my website, www.drdinamcmillan.com, you'll look for the contact tab. My website also contains information on my books, links to my videos and podcasts where I've been a guest, my blogs, and other goodies. Once again, my website is www.drdinamcmillan.com. www.theunmaskedmind.com. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Dr. Dina McMillan.